Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Buenos tardes, mi amigo. Hola, my good friends. Cinco de mayo's on Tuesday, and I hoped we'd see each other again.
I'm joined here on the Mikey Likes You podcast with someone that is very important to me. Maybe, arguably, the most important person in my life. And my wife, Bianca, is obviously a candidate. But this person, probably more important only because she's not capable of really taking care of herself, whereas my wife is unbelievably capable of taking care of herself. This young lady really needs me. Her name, Magnolia Moon Catherwood. Say hello, Magnolia.
Hi.
So how are you?
I'm good.
How are you dealing with, like, the big changes in your life from the lockdown? You know, like Zoom school and no...
Well, it's actually okay because I'm, like, in my bedroom and I get to do school. But it's fun because I don't really have to go anywhere. It's fun because I'm in my bedroom. And on the breaks, we don't, like, have nothing to play with. We can just, like, play with our toys for, like, I don't know, an hour or so.
Well, it's not really an hour.
Well, some of my breaks are.
Some of your break. Well, only your lunch break, right?
And my break.
Your break, yeah. Break. I was curious, you know, my podcast, it talks about, like, health a lot.
Yeah. How? Told me 100 times.
Oh, sorry. Jeez, Louise. How did you develop your ability to, like, understand when you should eat sweets and junk food and when you should eat healthy, nourishing food?
Well, when I was a baby, I couldn't really hear that much. So I sort of was, like, reading, like, movements and stuff. So when my parents are, like, moving towards the kitchen or the dining room, I'm like, oh, it's time for dinner. And then, like, when we're dressing up or heading towards the couch, I know, okay, that's time for candy. That's time for dessert.
So, I'm trying to follow you here. So, you knew it was time for dessert when people were wearing certain outfits?
Because I knew it was Halloween, you know.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so, like, certain special occasions meant...
Yeah.
Like cake, pie, candy.
Yeah.
Ah, gotcha.
Even though I do not like pie one bit.
Okay, but what my question is, like, you're 6 years old, and most 6 year olds don't like to eat as much healthy food as you do. You love to eat juicy meat and fish.
And I love spinach.
And salads and stuff.
Salad is delicious.
And fruit. And, like, you really do like it. I mean, you like junk food too, obviously, like every kid. But you really do like to eat healthy foods. Mm-hmm. How did you develop that ability? Like, what did mom and papa do that really worked for you? And then what could we do better to make it so that you like to eat healthy foods?
Well, I really like healthy foods right now, so you don't really have to. But when I was young, I didn't really like it that much, right?
Yeah, that's not true. Some of the first foods you ate were sweet potato and avocado and, like, really healthy stuff.
Yeah. But the reason I like it so much is because I just, like, most kids don't really try as much. So, but I was like, I guess I'll just try this. And then I tried it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this stuff is so good. Why did I never eat this before? So I just love it so much now. And I'm like, oh, I'm a totally new kid.
So this the trick is to just have an open mind and be willing to try anything.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, this is really good. I should eat this more often.
Okay. That's really good advice. I think that's really good advice.
Another way of something about me is that I like the dentist.
Why do you like the dentist so much?
Well, because it's fun because you, like, get a toy after. And you also, at my dentist, you get to watch a movie while it. And it, like, feels good because at my dentist, you get to bring a stuffy to cuddle with. And it's really nice.
Okay, so it does sound like a nice experience because you get to cuddle with your stuffy. And you get to watch a movie, which is
And you get a toy after.
It's not really something you get to do a lot, you know, watch TV or watch a movie. So you get, it's like a special thing. Yeah, okay, so makes sense. Like, what about exercise? Like, what's the key to, like, enjoying exercise and doing enough exercise?
Well, the key to doing enough exercise and joining, like, a lot of exercise is just to have fun. Well, like,
you're doing exercise right now as we speak.
I know.
Okay.
Well, one little thing I like to do is I like to hold on to a giant stretchy rubber band that's hanging on a bar and swing on it.
So it's like, just swing. It's like doing your jumping exercises, but because you have Papa's exercise band, it makes you jump a little higher like you're on the moon.
Yeah. And I can also swing on it, so I like to do that a lot.
It's your moon jumps, yeah. And your swings?
Yeah.
What is your favorite, like, what are some of your favorite things to do that are exercise?
When I do the splits and put my head all the way down.
Oh, like the big stretches? Almost like almost, but you hate yoga.
Yeah.
But yoga's stretching.
Well, it's because yoga's more calm, but I am wild.
That's true.
So I like to, like, get the moving. So I like to do that and then do, like, move it, and then do it again, and then move it, and then do it again, and then move it, and do it again.
You know what's so funny?
What?
Your papa's the exact same way. Because I do. I like movement. I like movement and everything, but I can't really get into yoga because it's too slow for me. I need to go and get sweaty and get crazy, you know?
Me too.
So, what are some of, like, what are the things that make you feel good about the world right now?
Probably because it's awesome for kids. We get to stay home, do whatever we want, watch TV a lot more.
Yeah, more than usual, right? Yeah, what are some of the things that concern you about the world right now?
I just don't like wearing masks. It's terrible. And people think that it will help the coronavirus, but it won't.
Why won't it help?
Because you could get sick in a mask. Because some masks are hard to breathe in, and then you could lose air and start choking.
Oh, that's a very in-depth way of looking at it. Okay, so you don't like wearing masks.
Nope.
What are some things, like, in your life that aren't related to the lockdown? Like, just in the world around you that you see that you go, I wish I could do something about that. That bothers me.
Well, it's mostly all the plastic in the water.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Because I love all these water creatures. They're so pretty, but all that trash in the ocean and plastic and all that, it can kill the coral and everything and trap everything, and then the ocean goes bye-bye, and then I don't like that.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you see in the world, just in your everyday life, that you go, I really love that. That makes me happy.
Probably.
Over here. No one can hear you if you walk that way.
Okay. Okay. Probably my friend Liv.
Your friend Liv, yeah. And all your friends, really, right?
Yeah, you're pretty lucky. Much all my friends. I have a bunch of friends.
Is it important to have friends?
Yes.
Yeah? I think it is too. It's hard when you grow up.
Yeah.
When you're an adult, it's hard to make new friends. But when you're a kid, mm-hmm. it's kind of easy, huh?
Yep.
No, don't touch it. That's where that microphone is what's recording. So if you touch it. Oh, sorry. Do you have any final messages for the people that listen to the show?
Yes.
Okay.
Whatever you're doing, always have fun.
Keep a smile on your face, right?
Yep.
I love you very much.
Well, one thing about cleaning is...
Cleaning?
Well, one thing about cleaning is if you're cleaning mm-hmm. and you don't like cleaning mm-hmm. and you think it's boring, mm-hmm. turn it into a game.
Oh, okay.
Like one time I was cleaning my room, but I don't like cleaning my room. But then my mom was like, I was like, hey, let's turn it into a game. And then we were trying to, it was my babysitter's birthday. And it was crazy because like 3 days after that, it was actually her birthday.
Oh, okay.
And she was actually babysitting me.
Great. Well, Magnolia, it's been riveting talking to you. Would you be willing to come back on my podcast sometime and just give us some updates?
Sure.
Okay. I love you.
I love you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the greatest podcast on earth. Certainly not the most listened to. I have no real evidence to make that claim, but, you know, I'm going to stick with it. Yeah, greatest on earth. Nothing objective, really, to back that up. But I am your host, Mike Catherwood. This is Mikey Likes You. Got a lot of exciting guests on the docket coming up very soon. But today I thought I'd get back to basics and go with a Q&A. I do think people appreciate those, or at least that's the sense I get when I look at my DMs and whatnot. You know, people, and also look by the analytics of the podcast, the Q&A stuff or the stuff where I don't have a guest and I just kind of give insight on certain topics, those seem to do better. So I'm not saying I'm going to go away from doing guests, but I'm going to steer more towards the intimate relationship that you and I have as broadcaster and listener, and just lean into that a little bit more. Before we get to the amazing Q&A, which I guarantee will be just amazing, I got to tell you about my friends at Bet Online. They are fantastic. They really do make things so much better when it comes to professional sports, because let's face it, we may not want to say it out loud, but the lockdown has kind of made things a little bit less exciting when it comes to professional and college sports. But Bet Online makes sure that it is still the most exciting thing you can be involved with when it comes to being a spectator, because they put you right inside the game. I mean, the NFL season, full swing. NBA season, Lakers are the best. Thank you very much. MLB, Dodgers are the best. Thank you very much. You're not at the game when it comes to the NFL, but you could still be a part of it because of Bet Online. You got game spreads, totals, teams, players, coaching props. Bet Online gives you more options to wager than any other place online. And there's always the Bet Online Casino. Let me tell you something, buddy. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today. Bet Online, your online sports book experts. All right, so here's how it works. I put out the bat signal via Instagram and Twitter to have you guys send me your questions, and I will do my best to answer them. It's at Mikey Likes You One, the number one, and then also at Mike Catherwood on both Instagram and Twitter. Those are the accounts for both Instagram and Twitter. Send me your messages. You can always DM me too. I really try to get back to you with the DM stuff, but I think I've made references to this in the past couple episodes. It gets crazy, and I'm so happy. I feel so grateful that people turn to me in such with such volume of questions, because in a weird way, it lets me know that people trust me, to give me those questions. And a lot of times they're really personal. So I feel very good about that. But the volume is so high that it makes it hard for me to get back to everyone, but I try my best. But this episode here, just going to be me answering those questions. At the Matt Vosk, you always seem to be able to get up and go. What's the secret to your motivation? What's the best way to cultivate a motivation within yourself? A really good question. And, I guess – this is a good example of how social media isn't exactly representative of real life. I try my best to make my social media just that. It's not some facade. But of course, naturally, it is a little bit cherry picked because I don't put up pictures or video of me lying in my bed going, ugh, and my daughter like hitting me going, Papa, get up. And my wife like, yelling from the other room, honey, let's go. It's 7:45. We got it. Can you please get up, help feed the dogs? That happens. I'm just like everyone else. I do struggle to get up and go. But I do, I find a way pretty much 100% of the time to get around to doing what I need to do. Part of that I think is it's hard to like put my finger on what it is. A lot of it's my history and routine for me, and I think for a lot of addicts and drug addicts and alcoholics, it's essential. I can't, and this is not necessarily a good thing, but I can't. It's very hard for me to deviate from scheduled tasks, and I have to have routine. It makes things a lot more enjoyable, and it also makes me a lot more effective at life, because drugs and alcohol was like 90% of my existence and was my entire motivation for six, seven years of my life. When I replaced that, I had to kind of keep things very, very scheduled and be punctual about it. I also try to remind myself of how bad I feel when I don't get around to doing the things that I really want and or need to do. So just try to like think of the end result of not doing the yard work or doing your workout or your meditation, whatever it may be. That is something that I've used all the time, where I say, I really don't want to do A, B, or C, but I know how much worse I'll feel if I don't in 5 hours. So I just kind of tell myself that. Also, I think when you have a schedule and a routine, like when I get up and I immediately meditate, immediately make my bed or do those things or make my family breakfast, and then it's like a snowball effect. The quicker you get to kind of hitting these tasks, the more and more it becomes easier and kind of effortless to go into the next task and so on. So if you start right from the beginning of your day, I think within the 20 minutes of you waking up, that little 20 minute window can be really crucial to dictating how the rest of the day is going to be. And then also, I think I found that with a handful of things, it really is almost drug-like in that I can immediately feel the effects. Exercise, meditation are two good ones. Spending personal time with my wife or my daughter, especially like really quality personal time, not like sitting next to my wife while we both mutually look at our phones. I mean, like, going for a walk with my wife and holding hands, or going for a walk with the dogs and like without earphones and like listening to the sound of the birds. I really do feel a change. Is it as profound as the change I would feel from cocaine or whiskey? Probably not, to be honest. But I can feel that. Certainly with exercising, I'm a different guy. If I don't get to my workouts, and really go hard, if I even on like quote unquote scheduled recovery days, I don't feel as comfortable in my own skin as the days when I go balls to the wall. There's something about that really digging deep that makes me feel better. So you kind of naturally get a little bit more motivation. So those are my three, and you know, I certainly don't know if I have the right answer, but that's what's worked for me is A, sticking to scheduling and making sure that you get to it right from waking up. That really helps. B is reminding yourself of like maybe how much worse you'll feel if you don't do it. And then the third one is finding the enjoyment, you know, recognizing the actual pleasure that comes from doing these things that may seem difficult. Beso del Sol. What's your best advice for finding a romantic partner? You seem to have found a happy love in your life, and I hope to find the same for myself. Thanks and wishing you and yours all the best, Panama. I think that is a reference to a Loveline appearance of Beso del Sol, if it is the same person, where she said she was in the country of Panama, and I, every time she referenced that, would sing the chorus to Van Halen's Panama. Oh, genius radio. Best advice for finding a romantic partner. Man, I think we make a big mistake in finding a partner a priority. And what I mean by that is if the end result is all that's on your mind, like I got to find a man, got to find a woman, I need to do whatever I need to do that, it kind of screws the whole system up. And instead, if you just constantly are working on becoming a better you, that stuff falls into place. It's kind of like finding your passion or finding like the right line of work to go into. If you're just out trying to find a job to pay the bills, chances are it's going to be hard to find something that you love to do that really stimulates you, right? And the same thing goes, I think, for partners. Now, look, you know, there's an obvious difference in that when I was 20 through 23, I needed to pay the bills. You don't need companionship at every second of your life. You absolutely do not. I think that it is crucial for a long, fulfilling life to find a partner. But you don't need it, right? Like you need to pay the bills. So there are times in our lives where we just need a job. You just need to go out and find a job, and your only goal is find employment, right? But if you were to do that for the duration of your existence, you would never, you probably never, chances are, find a good job to stimulate you and make you happy. And if you're just like, I need to find a man, I need to find a woman, and I'm going to devote my day to going out and doing so, chances are very low that you're going to stumble into the person that is right for you. Whereas if you continually focus on the journey instead of the destination, you're constantly working on yourself. You're going, trying new things, learning new skills, you know, taking a guitar class, going to do yoga, going to the gym and getting a personal trainer, reading lots of books, joining a book club, whatever it may be. You know what I'm saying? Like going out for walks, going to like dog training groups, whatever it is, like you're putting yourself out there and you're making yourself a better person and you're working on becoming a better you. Involved in that is meeting new people. And because you're devoting yourself to being a better you, the people that you will meet in that arena, you know, in those circles are oftentimes a lot more better suited for you and helping that process, right? Because that's, to me, like, I don't know. This is one of those things where there's no right or wrong answer. I've only found, because you pointed out, it seems like you found a happy love life. I certainly have. I mean, My wife is better than I could have ever dreamed, you know, a partner could be. She continually makes me want to be a better person for my own sake and for her sake. And she really, it sounds corny, but she's like my soulmate. She nourishes my soul. And, you know, I think that you got to look to find that person. And the only way you're going to do that is by constantly surrounding yourself with environments that also nourish your soul. Because if you're just going out to bars or going on Tinder or whatever it may be, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with either of the two, but if your goal is like, I must find mate, and you're going to do these things, fill in the blank, whatever it is, to get to that mate, you're not necessarily carving out that area of where you're going to find the soulmate. You'll find a partner, but it's not in the world of enlightenment and growth. So that's my biggest advice, is just give up on this desperate need to find a partner and then work on yourself. And then subsequently, you'll surround yourself with people that might naturally be better for you as a partner. That's a terrible question. How did Rudy celebrate the Dodgers win? Very good question. My good friend Rudy Cisneros at Kulo Breaker on Instagram. Very, very funny, very talented young man. A cholo and a kind-hearted one. He is a huge Dodger fan, as most all Mexicans are. And he detailed how he celebrated his beloved Dodgers victory on his Instagram at Kulo Breaker, and then also on Janky Town, the podcast from my good close friends Beer Mug, Johnny Cantro, Omar Khan, and Dave the King of Mexico. That is the podcast they do now that there is no more Kevin and Bean Show. Janky Town. Rudy called in to detail just exactly how he celebrated, and it's quite a tale. Let's see. The Rick Schaefer. Hey, Rick. Hey, Mike. Are you aware of any sprinting routines for beginners? That is, people who have recently lost enough weight to be able to consider sprinting as an exercise option. You live. First off, congratulations. That's awesome. Sprinting is, there's walking and sprinting are the two best forms of exercise. A lot of people are not capable of sprinting, so you walk, you know. It's like they always say, the old saying, you have to crawl before you can walk. Well, you have to walk before you can sprint. And, you know, not all of us are nimble 18-year-olds. Sprinting demands a lot of the body, and it's like deadlifts and sprinting are like the two things that you're just begging to get hurt if you don't do it right or if you're not capable of doing it. But once you can, deadlifting and sprinting they're it. But if I had to give two things, because, you know, not everybody has access to plates and Olympic bars, walking and sprinting, every human should and needs to at some point be doing that. Even senior citizens, my dermatologist, and I'm not someone who's particularly concerned with my skin. My wife forced me to go see a dermatologist because I had these like sunspots and she was concerned that it could be cancerous. So I got it checked out. Well, it turns out the guy's like 60 and a competitive sprinter. And so I just started talking this guy's ear off and we kept going back and forth, and he's jacked and he's, you know, looks amazing. He looks 20 years younger, and he's, because running as fast as you can is really the most basic expression of human athleticism. Jumping and running, right? But running even more so, because it focuses a little bit more on that posterior chain and the glutes and the upper hamstrings. And if you get yourself in a position to be able to sprint, that means that everything's going well health-wise. As soon as you have an injury or you let yourself go or you just – you know, you haven't been exercising enough, or you've been distorting your exercise to the point that you have massive imbalances, that means like I can't sprint right now, which is a bad sign. So being able to sprint and continually doing so is always a great barometer of things going well. Now, just starting sprinting, very smart question. You don't want to just jump into it and start training like Usain Bolt. The biggest advice I would give you is do not start from a dead stop, at least for like 6 weeks. You have to work up to the point where you can train from a dead stop, like a actual sprinter. A competitive sprinter starts from the blocks. The starting from the blocks is the most demanding thing to those hamstrings and the very delicate muscles that are involved in sprinting. So always work from like a running start. You know, slow jog, walk to a slow jog, and then you hit a marker, you know, a cone or a light post, and that's when you begin your sprint. The rolling start is much safer and it's much easier on you. So that's for the beginning sprinters, that's a big piece of advice. The second piece of advice would be keep the volume very low at first. Honestly, start with 50 meters, five of them. At 90% your max speed with that rolling start, and see how five feels with 2 minutes rest in between. I understand you're going to feel like maybe I'm not doing enough. That's fine. There's very little downside to not doing enough at first when it comes to heavy lifting and sprinting. These extreme high intensity exercises, these dynamic explosive exercises, or these incredibly taxing exercises, things like deadlift, things like squat, things like sprinting, things like jumping or plyometrics, there's very little downside to doing too little in the beginning. There's an overwhelming downside to doing too much. Overwhelming. So always have a little left in the tank until you build up to the point where you really can get in tune with your body and then go hard. Charles Poliquin, the muscle guru himself, God rest his soul, wrote a great book on training for sprinting. I recommend it highly, even if you're not all that interested in sprinting, because it focuses on the development of musculature and athletic movement to make you a better sprinter, which is something that, like I mentioned earlier, is something that we should all be striving for. So check that out at Charles Poliquin's website. I don't know if it's .net or .org or strengthsensei.com. It might be his name. Just Google Charles, spelled normally, Poliquin, P-O-L-I-Q-U-I-N. He has a breakdown on sprinting. And then also Westside Barbell, Louis Simmons, the geniuses over there, have a complete gut training manual for runners, runners of all distances and all speeds. And anything the West Side guys recommend is good. My question is at C Maulu 22. I hope I said that right. Thank you for posting my review. Oh, you're welcome. He or she must have been someone who gave that amazing review on iTunes. Thank you to anyone who reviewed, because all the reviews are so amazing and heartwarming. So thank you, C Maulu 22, and then anyone else. But my question is, what do you do to relax, recharge? Great question. I'm a big believer in meditation. I know it's hard to do. I know it doesn't seem like it's effective to people who haven't engaged in it in a prolonged way. But meditation is amazing. I love it. I recommend it. I'm not saying there's something wrong if you don't do it, but that has been crucial to me. I'm not a good sleeper. I wish I was a better sleeper. I probably am irresponsible in ways that could make me a better sleeper, but I'm just not. I've also naturally never been a good sleeper. I've always stayed up. Oh, really? Thanks, guys. Harry. Off. Harry. Hey, you son of a gun. You don't even know what you're barking at this point. Harry. Off. Hey, come here. Oh, there's a dog. Oh, okay. Dog walking by the window. You still shouldn't do that. It's just a dog. Anyway, Meditation's huge because I'm not a good sleeper, and I think that that can help. Also, obviously, get a good night's rest. Walks. I believe anyone who's at all familiar with this podcast knows that I'm a big believer in walking and how beneficial it is in so many ways. But it also is beneficial in a psychiatric, emotional way. I just – things are just getting at me. I'm starting to get stressed. I get my dogs on leashes and go for a 10-minute walk or something, especially with no headphones, and just see the sunshine here in Southern California. If you're living in a place where there's no sunshine, sometimes even like the gloomy skies can be so beautiful. Hear the birds, listen to things, listen to the sounds. I think that that's really helpful for me. It has been. Also, reading fiction. Reading fiction has been really helpful to me. I always get a little bit happier when I have a good book that I can get into. I just finished Una Out of Order. I think that's the name of it. Yeah, Una Out of Order. Can't recommend it enough. Kind of a sci-fi character study life thing where this woman wakes up every New Year's Eve in a different phase in her life. So she time travels to like herself at 60. And then next New Year's Eve, she wakes up and she's herself at 23 and banks back and forth. And like, it's such an amazing and beautifully well-written book about identity and dealing with knowing who's involved in your life that is helpful and positive and who isn't, and recognizing who you are as a person and what we attach to that we think is part of our identity and what really isn't, you know. I can't recommend it enough, you know. So reading fiction has been good. And also playing the guitar. As you can tell by the intro to every episode, my beautiful guitar playing. but I do. I love it. It's very soothing and very therapeutic. You know, I sometimes like really practice and get involved in like string skipping and arpeggios and scales and stuff like that. And I really practice. Other times I just tool around and sing little songs, and either way it becomes very relaxing, very beneficial to me. What's your opinion on healthy zero-cal energy drinks like Bang and Rain? Also, when is Rudy going to call into the podcast? That is from Vlad's dad. Hey, Vlad's dad. My opinion on those is, like, certainly not a health food, but the sugar-free zero-calorie energy drinks are real useful in a pinch. I'm not of the belief that they're, like, killing you. Like, a lot of these, you know, people make this idea. Create this idea that artificial sweeteners are you know, poison. I don't see any compelling or really, frankly, any science to show that. I've seen some science that they can create problems with your digestion, but they're not causing cancer and they're not killing you. I do think that they do contain a lot of caffeine. So be careful with them. But if you're having one a day, or like a pre-workout Bang, or, you know, before you go to work instead of your cup of coffee, I don't see it as a problem. They taste delicious. They're zero calories. I wouldn't base my diet around them. I wouldn't rely on them, but I certainly don't see it as like an issue. I drink them, you know, I like Bang. I like the Miami Cola Bang. It's like a Diet Coke, but with some added amino acids and some taurine and things like that, you know, for pre-workout. And I dig them because I'm a huge coffee guy, but sometimes like a hot cup of coffee is either inconvenient or just isn't going to work out. Like sometimes I love coffee, but like a big giant cup of coffee is not, it makes my tummy kind of feel weird or whatever it is. So I dig it. And sometimes, look, I live in LA, so especially in the summer, like the last thing I want is like a hot beverage. So an ice cold Bang, you know, I dig it. Like I said, don't a six pack a day, probably a bad idea. Certainly don't have them too close to bedtime, but I sign off on it, you know. Let's see here. Literally like a week ago, I figured out the Psycho Mike reference. Oh, okay. This isn't really a question. It's a comment. So, you know, it happens. People know me from K-Rock, from either Loveline or the Kevin and Bean Show, where, you know, my on-air moniker was Psycho Mike. And then they may be familiar with Mike Catherwood for a long time before they make the connection. And so, hey, how you doing? I am, in fact, Psycho Mike. After doing strong lifts 5x5 for 12 weeks, I got way stronger, lost weight at the same time, but I've hit a plateau. What programming would you recommend next? That is from Raphael5859. Well, strong lifts, again, I recommend it to everyone, beginner, intermediate, whatever. Even if you're an advanced lifter, there's a lot of benefit into spending 6 weeks just getting back to 5x5 sets of five reps with the basic three. Really minimizing your training and getting back to it. The next thing, if you're struggling with plateau, which is something that happens, you got to assess like what your goals are from here. If your goals are to continue getting stronger, you're going to have to become a little bit more of a specialist. That is what happens when you start lifting heavy weights and you get good at it. The kind of basic programs aren't going to work. You have to start advancing to a little bit more volume, a little bit more intensity, a little bit more structure. So if strength and continuing to grow in the big three lifts is something that you are interested in, I recommend the Texas Method or 531 by Jim Wendler. Losing more weight and getting leaner is something that you are invested in, then I would recommend Martin Burkhan's program of reverse pyramid training. And you can get that all spelled out for you in the Lean Gains Method. That is a book that Martin Burkhan wrote. If you're looking for growth and hypertrophy, that's your big thing. I would say either the best place to go. Probably the German volume training. Charles Poliquin wrote the best book about it, I think. The guy that I mentioned earlier about the sprinting routine, Charles Poliquin. German volume training, always, in my opinion, the best. And that goes all the way back to super training, which is like the handbook and Bible for sports training. German volume training for overall just muscle growth. Those are the big three that I would recommend. Zach DiDonato says, if I'm new to personal training and the person I'm training is new to working out, how should I train them? Good question. I think for you, if you're new to training, a big mistake I made and a lot of people make is they want to please their client more so than they want to make results for the client. Meaning they're more I got really more consumed with wrecking people and making them sweaty messes before they walked out the gym, as opposed to like thinking about what's best for them in the long term. So don't get hung up, like don't let your ego tell you that you have to have people doing, you know, girls need to be doing like lots of walking lunges so that they wake up and their butt sore so that they keep paying you money, when in actuality, like a more structured linear progression would be better. Or, you know, guys, they want to do like a CrossFit circuit because they feel really sweaty and tired, but it's not maybe necessarily best for them when it comes to like gaining muscle or losing fat, you know, whatever it is. So like really analyze every person as a unique person, because they are. And then also don't get consumed with pleasing them as they walk out the door. Instead, get more consumed with pleasing them overall. That's my biggest advice. And then also, how do you train someone new to it? You know, obviously be very specific, but be very realistic. Let them know that they're going to see massive benefits from training because they are a beginner, but also that it's not something that you can just dive into full bore, that there are going to probably be some some Daniel-san, Mr. Miyagi type situations where, you know, in the original Karate Kid where he's like waxing the cars and painting the fences. And he's like, Mr. Miyagi, what am I doing? I'm not learning any karate. Well, he had to just kind of really focus on the boring fundamentals for a couple weeks before he was even capable of really diving into some more advanced stuff and let he or she know that there may be 4 or 5 sessions where you're not getting what you might have expected, but this is essential and it's important and healthy. Those are my 2 best pieces of advice. Let's see. I'm going to switch over to my Mikey Likes You account and look at those questions there. Riveting, I know. I recently lost about 70 pounds doing a combination of keto and CrossFit. I know your favorites. Funny. I've noticed that my wife has gotten weirdly jealous of me. She's not overweight, aside from maybe a little flab around the belly. It seems like she's trying to sabotage my health and weight loss by recommending we eat and drink way too much of the wrong things. How do I tell her that this is a problem for me without imploding my relationship? Really good question. Really good question. Congratulations on the weight loss. That's huge. 70 pounds is amazing. Well, oh God, it's rough. But it's common. This happens in relationships, right? It happens with professional stuff. You know, one person starts really taking off, the other person's not, and the other person kind of even subconsciously starts to sabotage the other person, or weight loss, or growth and development in anything. I would have a very serious talk with your wife, and I would lead off by saying this. I'm not going to in any way try to change you. If you want to eat Cheetos and wash it down with a soda, you're an adult and that's your business. But if you love me, you will understand that you should not influence me to engage in that eating and drinking. I'm not trying to change you. Why on earth would you try to change me? I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry that it makes you feel odd that I'm making this progress, but I don't in any way look at you differently. I'm really happy with myself and I'm really feeling great about all the things that I've done. And I just wish and hope that you as my wife can respect that and encourage me. You know, I dealt with this a lot when it came to drugs and alcohol. When I got clean, there was definitely like a weird thing between me and my friends who continued to drink and party. And the last thing I should do, I don't think I did do this, but I do see it a lot sometimes in the recovery community, is someone gets clean and then they go around, you know, being some evangelist for the sober life, telling people how to do it. You know, it's like, fuck off, dude. Your progress, your journey is about you. And I had to tell my friends, I was like, man, I definitely don't want you to change in any way unless you want to. I hope this doesn't cause problems, but I need you guys to respect me and not drinking and not using drugs. And all that means is like, you guys do what you want to do. Your life is your life, but please don't in any way compromise my goals when it comes to sobriety. And I think that you kind of should go after it the same way when it comes to fitness and health. You know, I don't think you, if your wife wants to eat bad foods or unhealthy things or drink unhealthy things, that really is her business. Obviously, you may want her to change her ways because you love her, but nothing's going to come of you browbeating that into her. You're not her parent. But alternatively, she's not your parent. And if you've made this decision to change your life, she should absolutely respect that. And it is disrespectful, I think, for her to not recognize how hard you're working and how good this makes you feel. You know, so just acknowledge that and tell her and be gentle about it. You know, it's not like, you fucking bitch, I'm doing my best here. I'm losing weight. I'm training hard. And all you do is, no, it's just like, look, honey, if you want to eat that, that's great. Enjoy it. I hope you love every single bite. But for me, it would make me feel a lot better and make me be a better husband if I could lay off that and really not have you push me to engage in that. Let's see here. As far as trying to be in a caloric deficit, would that be based on the resting basal metabolic rate or should exercise be considered? Thanks. Great question. Exercise should be considered, but it's unbelievably inaccurate how we measure caloric burn, caloric use by the body. So I say err on the side of too much. Always err on the side of too much. Always err on the side of not going hard enough in the gym and then tweak from there. Always err on the side of not of eating too many calories and then tweak from there. Because I'm a big believer, and there's a lot of science to back this up. It's not just me, my personal ideas, but minimum effective dosage is huge. And minimum effective dosage goes for training. It also goes for caloric deficit. It also goes for caloric surplus. If you can gain a pound of muscle a month on 300 calorie surplus, stick with that. There's no need to go to a 600 calorie surplus. Only bad things come from that. If you can lose weight effectively at a 300 calorie surplus, stick with that. Don't be like, well, the gains will be better if I go to 600, because it's just like training and dieting. It's like cutting your hair. If you have long hair and you go in and you sit down at the hair salon or the barber and he or she says, okay, how much do we take off? It's really not a big deal if you take off too little, because you'd be like, you know what? Now that I look at it, you know, go ahead and take off another inch. If you take off too much, you're fucked, right? You're like, oh, shit. Now I got to wait months for this to grow back to get to where I want it. And the same thing goes for dieting and training. If you go in and you're like, well, 10 sets of deadlifts, seems like a good idea. And really 3 or 4 was a sweet spot. 10 puts you in the hospital and you can't train and you get burnt out and you get exhausted emotionally and physically. And if you were to do 2 instead of 3 or 4, which would be the sweet spot, I'd be like, okay, well, next time I think I can go a little more and then just add a set. Dieting's the same way. If you take off 200 calories from where you want to be or from where you think you should be, you take off 200 calories and you're like, that's been 2 weeks. I haven't lost a pound. Go ahead. Bump it up to 400. If you take off 200 calories and you lose a pound a week, it's like, dude, okay, let's rock and roll. You stay in much better metabolic health. You can retain muscle mass a lot better. There's just all these benefits, okay? So that's my big thing. You definitely do want to account for your lifestyle and your training, but be cautious and always err on the side of too much and then go from there. Good question, though. Tom A0893. Have you ever had to train through an injury? From Jordan Hasty. Tennis elbow has been nagging for months and strong lifts affect it much. Only barbell rows. And the doctor said it's fine to keep doing it. No long-term consequences. Yeah, I've had to train through a lot of injuries. A lot. Especially once I started getting into Muay Thai, boxing, and jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu especially, even though it's not, like, initially it's called the gentle art, but like everything gets tweaked in jiu-jitsu. All your lower back and your fingers and your knees, and anyone who trains knows it. I leave the gym in Muay Thai hurt more because leg kicks and punches to the face hurt. But it, like the nagging actual injuries, they're so big in grappling, man. They're so big. And I've had to train through a lot of injuries. And you just figure out a way to make it a good thing. For instance, if you hurt your knee, then do some physical therapy on your legs and then train your upper body. You know, start getting into like maybe your weaknesses in your upper body. You know, you add a little bit more volume to the upper body so that you can train your weak parts. If you hurt your elbow, obviously, like, okay, now it's time to do a squat focus program. You know, just to analyze what you can do to train through it and increase your ability to get better, as opposed to letting the injury and the injury be like a real problem. If endurance is a problem, you know, for people who hurt their knees or their ankles, and you're like, well, I'm a runner. Okay, well, maybe it's time for you to start building your aerobic base on the rower or a bike. Maybe it's time to start working mobility. There's always ways. Just think around it. I don't want to say train through it. Train around it would be my best advice. But don't just stop training. Unless, obviously, you know, look, you break your fucking neck or something. Two questions there, Johnny Muscles. First, I love lifting. It's 1 hour a day, Monday through Friday. I get to be myself. I listen to whatever music I want, be aggressive, blah, blah, blah. I get to be selfish. It's my personal therapy. Okay, totally get that. My workout program is lifting 4 to 5 times per week. I split workouts up into doing 2 to 3 muscle groups each day. 1 day chest and back, day 2 biceps and quads, day 3 shoulders and hams, day 4 tricep, blah, blah, blah. I've heard you condone spending too much time in the gym, but this is how I train. Is there any reason this is a bad idea? Second question. Oh, let's work on the first question. No, I don't think – if you found something that works for you, there's no – anyone who tells you they have the absolute unequivocal right answer is wrong. They don't. I don't. I personally don't like to see people training for too long at one time because of the hormonal stuff. And then also it just leads to people getting burnt out more. I do think you're much more motivated and there's a lot more sustainability and longevity in training 3 to 4 times a week for 45 hard minutes, as opposed to training for 2 hours a day or an hour and a half a day. For prolonged periods of time. I just don't think the average person or even athletes, I don't think that there's as much benefit to that training unless you're a professional athlete, and it can very often lead to being burnout. But if that's what works for you, man, do it. Go after it. If you found that you're a person, like, for instance, I profess the idea because I think it works for more people overall, of like shorter 3 to 4 days a week training sessions, okay, focused on compound lifts and then work in your walking every day. Those are the like two main things I always talk about. But I train twice a day hard, and I do sprints, and I do a lot of accessory work that I don't recommend for everybody because that's what works for me. I've also been training for 20 something years and have been dieting like an idiot for 15 years, you know, so my level of muscle memory, my level of knowledge, my level of how in tune I am with my own body. This all is something that you have to take into account. So yes, I do talk about shorter sessions, but if an hour and a half or an hour a day, 6 days a week is like where you feel like you're the best you and you're seeing results, go for it. Second question. Since COVID, I have built a gym in my basement. The ceilings are low, just enough room to stand. I've heard you say we should do our overhead presses standing to our max, our cores as much as possible. Blah 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 blah. I can still do presses, but I have to do them seated, or should I do them kneeling and get down on my knees like it's Saturday night behind the Sizzler? Thanks, man. I appreciate all you do, and hope nothing but the best for you and yours. Well, thank you. This is from Stolen Goose 706. Yes, I do think like the overhead standing press is better when you're standing, but it's not something that shouldn't be done if you can't stand up. Just seated presses are great. They do focus more on the delts. I just think there's overall more bang for your buck. You get like the thoracic mobility and stability stuff in your upper back, and you get the core work with doing the standing overhead press. But that doesn't mean if you can't do standing overhead presses, you should just not do them. No, seated presses are great. Seated presses are great. And it's always, you know, it's always like work with what you have. Let's see. Hello, long time, first time. I am 40-year-old recovering alcoholic, 10 years sober. Great, man. Congratulations. With a full-time job, nursing school, and a 3-year-old and amazing wife that makes it all possible. I am stressed for time to get my fitness in and have to do it at 4:30 a.m. in order to do so. I have to use a pre-workout, C4 from Costco, to get warmed up fast enough to smash through. Is there any time that you would recommend a pre-workout? I know it's not the best idea, but it's what works for me. If not, any substitutions? One more question. If possible, my total testosterone... Oh, right. First question. No, if you have to work out early in the morning... there was a long time where I had to train early in the morning. Now with the lockdown, things are different. But I used to train, 4:35 in the morning. I didn't want to eat at that time. And I certainly didn't want to wait around for a cup of coffee. So I would, I actually went to caffeine pills. That was my thing. Because I was trying to really diet at the time. So I didn't want to have the artificial sweeteners. And I know earlier I said they're not that big a deal. It's true. But they do, at least with me, they have a tendency to make me crave more sweets. So I was going away from them. But C4 is a good product. You know, go for it if that's what works for you. I get it. You know, training early in the morning, something to get you going, get you out of bed and get you. And sometimes you like, I just like a pre-work. I like the feeling and like I do think it helps get me a little bit more edgy and ready to rock. Okay, second question. My total testosterone levels are good, 750, but my free test is 1.5, lower than normal. Going to see a doctor about a few things involving this, but as a recovering alcoholic, how slippery is the TRT slope? Good question. Not very slippery at all. Testosterone is – TRT, what people – if you're not familiar, is testosterone replacement therapy. And it's not just for men. A lot of women in older age are seeing huge benefits with – these bioidentical hormones and treatments with progesterone and testosterone and things like that. And it is doctor prescribed and monitored use of testosterone and sometimes growth hormone and other things. It is a far cry from using steroids like a professional athlete or bodybuilder would do. What do I mean by that? First off, the common term when we talk about steroids or, you know, kind of illegally used steroids is anabolic steroids. Testosterone is a naturally occurring substance in the body that has anabolic properties, but it is not an anabolic. An anabolic is things like dicadorabinol, winstrol, anadrol. Anavar, those are the anabolics. The androgens are your testosterone derivatives. And so these are naturally occurring substances that exist in the body already. If because of modern lifestyle, those substances or those hormones are low, it's medicine to then treat those to get them back to a healthy level. Having extremely low testosterone for a man cannot – it's not just about like, hey, I don't feel as energetic and stuff. It can be disastrous. It can cause massive depression. It can have serious, serious long-term health problems. You know, it's not like steroid abuse, which is something that I engaged in my early 20s. These are medically calculated – hormone replacements that get you back into a healthy level. They're not getting you into an excessive level. When you either have an injury or you have some type of lifestyle problem that forces you to have low hormones, you are replaced with them to get them back to normal. It's literally no different than someone who has like Hashimoto's or some type of thyroid disease, given thyroid medication to get their thyroid activity back to normal. This is someone who's unhealthy using medicine to become healthy. And testosterone is not unhealthy if used properly, if used as testosterone replacement therapy, monitored by a medical professional, an endocrinologist or an MD of some sort. This is completely different. There are bodybuilding or physique goal type androgenic, anabolic things that I would steer clear of as a recovering addict. But mostly, you know, I misspoke. It's actually not androgenic stuff. It's some of these anabolics and then some of the stimulant-based fat-burning stuff. You got to stay away from that because that is going to change you and also – it lights that fire inside of you where it's like, well, if this much makes me feel like this, a little bit more is going to make me feel even better, and so on and so on. And it, you start to kind of go into that same cycle, that slippery slope you were talking about with the TRT. That's where you start to see that stuff. So I would not at all worry about TRT, medically monitored hormone replacement, as a recovering addict. But don't confuse that into hearing me say like, well, if I'm in recovery, I can use steroids and everything's fine. Or I can use clenbuterol or ephedrine, because I don't think that that's true. But replacing deficiencies in hormones, that's a far cry from something that I would be worried about when it comes to recovery. I am not on TRT. I am definitely interested and going to be on TRT at some point. I just turned 41, and I live a very taxing lifestyle physically and oftentimes emotionally. So it's just something that is necessary. Anyways, thank you to everybody who subscribes and listens. Please tell a friend if you believe in the podcast. I believe in the podcast. I want to continue making it. I want to make it better. I've also started to get so many requests for some type of like training program and diet advice that I have now started to explore the idea of Patreon. I would like your guys' help with ideas of how to structure it. I'm thinking about doing a basic, say $3 a month just to maybe have like 20 minute extras or some type of basic kind of basic little benefit. And then $10 and $20 a month for different structured programs like diet programs and training programs. But I would love, your guys' take on how I could best serve you, because I always envision doing this as a service more than anything. So I have a hard time kind of thinking about the idea of charging money, but I also can't realistically like draw out programs and give diet advice for free. And I do think it would help me to help you more. So now I'm really starting to seriously look at like how I can structure a Patreon so that it could be more beneficial to you, the listeners. Always send me your ideas at Mike Catherwood or at Mikey Likes You One. And thank you to my daughter, Magnolia. Thank you, Magnolia.
Hi, bye.
For that amazing interview. And remember, in this crazy mix-up world that makes you think that nobody cares, we do.
Yep, we sure do. And that whole time I was doing homeschool on the computer and spinning around in circles, that makes me very dizzy. Bye!
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.